The summer wind came blowing in from across the sea.
Tomorrow is the first official day of summer, and we are talking about summer weather with Michael Morgan, a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. And with you, if you have questions about all things weather-related, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. After that long, brutal winter and not-so-great spring, are you hoping for a nice hot summer this year, or do you like it a little bit cooler? What would you like summer to be like? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. We'll find out more about our long-term summer weather forecast, but let's take a call from Mary in La Crosse first. Hello, Mary.
Hi. I have an interesting weather phenomenon, excuse me, that I've observed, that it's been fun to observe from year to year. We bought a hobby farm in Vernon County in 1973, and we hadn't moved in yet, and we had relatives from South Dakota visiting, and we took them out one evening to show them our property, and there was a huge catalpa tree. There is still a huge catalpa tree right behind the house, and there had been a big storm the night before, and the yard and all the area was filled with these big catalpa blossoms that hang on the catalpa tree. And then as we lived there, I began to notice that each year when the catalpas were blooming on the tree, that we would have a big windstorm and the catalpa blossoms would be all over. And then when my son bought my farm in 2005, and it is a hobby farm, and he was going to be making hay, and I said, well, if you can't get your hay done, first crop done early, don't cut it when the catalpas are blossoming, because you'll get a big storm. And literally every year since then, I have observed, and with the exception of one year, just a few years ago, every year when that catalpa tree is blossoming, we get a huge storm, and that certainly is the case this year. I think there's even a name for that phenomena, kind of, and it makes sense. When these weather conditions are right for these, that it just happens that the catalpas are blossoming. But that's one of the weather things that we've observed on our farm that's been fun from year to year to watch.
Well, thanks for sharing that, Mary.
Yeah, thanks, Mary. That's very interesting. Is Mary still on?
Yes.
Yes,
yeah, Mary,
I am.
I had a question for you. Is that when you say a big storm occurs, are these big thunderstorms or just a big windstorm?
Well, this year both. My son lives there now, and I don't live there, but our whole area, we've had for nights in a row, and yesterday morning it was actually 5 o'clock, but it's been both wind and a lot of thunder and a lot of lightning and a lot of rain, but okay. Particularly combining the wind and the rain.
Okay, and these typically blossom in May or June. What's the
They're blossoming now. They started
right now,
blossoming.
Right now.
They started blossoming in La Crosse. They probably started blossoming 2 weeks ago, but on our farm in Vernon County, they probably started blossoming not more than a week to week and a half ago.
Okay. Well, that's really interesting. You're sort of in touch with sort of the patterns within in nature.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't know. You mentioned there may be a particular name for this phenomenon. I'm not aware of that, but I think you know it's certainly part of the seasonal variation in the weather, and I guess the timing of the blossoms coinciding with you know, when we get these big windstorms is sort of an interesting thing to note. I don't know if other. I have to talk to my colleagues about that phenomenon with other plants, but.
Thanks for sharing that story, Mary. Well, I said we would talk a little bit about what kind of weather this summer might bring. What is the long-term outlook?
Right. I'll get back to the first question you asked at the beginning. You know, summer officially arrives for us tomorrow at 5:51 Central Daylight Time. For meteorologists, however, we look at summer. You know, the summer months, really June, July, August,
mm-hmm.
So starting the 1st of June through the end of August. Because in the middle of that period, typically around July 18th of the week of that time period, is our warmest day of the year, when at least in southern Wisconsin we get up into the mid mid-80s is our sort of average high temperature for the date. That's the maximum, our average, the maximum average temperature occurs then. In the short range, so the forecast for the summer right now by the Climate Prediction Center is for us to be below normal to below normal temperature-wise for the upper Midwest. I think below normal is the perhaps is the key word there. So that doesn't mean we're not going to have days in the 90s or even over 100, but on average, we're going to be sort of biased to temperatures just below normal for the upper Midwest. For other parts of the country, it'll be warmer. And I think this is really a continuation of the pattern that we were in starting from last fall through the winter and spring of a northwesterly flow over the central part of the United States that'll bring down cooler air from central Canada periodically. In fact, while we're still warm today and the next couple of days, we're expected to go back below, you know, back to some cooler temperatures, mid-70s, late this week into next week. And that's going to persist for a while. That's in the next week or so. And then after that, getting back to above normal. But the official forecast for the summer is for below normal temperatures in the upper Midwest.
Well, I kind of like it when we have warmer weather in the summer. That's what summer is for. But so, and it, by what is normal for Wisconsin for the summer?
Yeah, so normal for Wisconsin, I could speak to sort of the Madison climatology as an example. During this time of the year right now, we should be having temperatures that are in the middle, typically middle to upper 70s for late June. And as we get into early July, around 80 to the mid-80s by mid-July, and then we begin our gradual fall off back into our descent into winter, if you will. And our low temperatures typically, this time of year, are sort of the low to middle 50s right now. By the time we get into early July, we'll be around 60 to 65 for our average low temperatures. Now, if you think back the last several summers, when we've had some really long, hot stretches, those summers we've had nighttime lows in the upper 70s or even low 80s sometimes, so it can be quite uncomfortable. This summer, we probably won't see as much of that.
Yeah, and what about... what about the outlook for, and I'm not sure if they even do this, in terms of stormy weather? Do we do longer-term forecasts for that?
Don't have really the, I guess the skill in that is something that really forecasters don't really have if you're looking at for the overall season, what's the outlook for severe weather chances in this area. But if you think about, some of the early discussion we had this morning with the typically cooler than normal temperatures doesn't mean we're not going to be hot, does not mean we're not going to have moisture at the surface. That might suppress some of our thunderstorm activity over the course of the summer. But it also does an interesting thing. It may suppress the thunderstorm activity, but with that cooler air over us and the warmer air over the mid-continent to our south, that's going to place us along a boundary where we're going to have that between these two air masses, and it's along that boundary that you often get severe weather. So small fluctuation in that boundary could bring in severe, pretty energetic storms into our area.
And what about just precipitation in general?
Right. So for precipitation, let me just take a look at that. I believe we're supposed to be slightly above normal, but let me just bring that up in front of me so I can give you that information. We're going to be about normal, actually. That's the forecast. So equal chances of above and below normal precipitation. There's no strong signal in that. The strongest signal really is from the Dakotas eastward into our state for temperatures to be below normal. Actually, the southern part of Wisconsin would probably closer to normal. And then the southeastern United States and over Texas, Oklahoma area, southern plains being above normal. So wet in the west, kind of about normal for us, equal chances, and then dry along the Gulf Coast.
Wet in the west.
Yeah, so actually they're going to pick up, there's the signal right now, maybe wet is not the best word to use, but above normal precipitation in the western part of the United States.
Which they need.
They need that, right. There's an ongoing long-term drought. The unfortunate part of this is that where the drought is perhaps most severe, if you look at California and parts of Nevada, they're going to be, their precipitation chances are kind of indistinct. I would say equal chances of above or below normal precipitation over there. And parts of central Texas and eastern Texas, likelihood of below normal precipitation. So, it's good that, Arizona and New Mexico have a chance of being above normal in their precipitation. That's really good for those areas. But it's probably not, you know, it's going to be, it remains to be seen whether it will be sufficient to get them back to where they should be in terms of water levels. It'll take quite a bit of precipitation to do that.
You know, I saw a piece on one of the national newscasts last night, and it was about warmer ocean temperatures in the Pacific and El Nino brewing. And I guess the gist of the story was that's going to help the drought in the West. Is that right?
Right. The drought in the West, and particularly the southern part of the United States. And, you know, that's the likelihood there with the a couple of issues with that. First of all, typically when we have El Ninos, that excites what's called a subtropical jet. That's a ribbon of very fast-moving air at very high levels in the atmosphere. And that's due to the deep convection, the strong thunderstorms that occur over those warm pools of water that are being created right now over the equatorial Pacific. And so that typically gives the southern part of the United States above normal precipitation in the fall and into the winter. In the summer, it's going to be a little bit indistinct, but with that strong jet, that also means suppression of hurricanes in the Atlantic. Doesn't mean we won't get a big one, does it? But it typically means that the conditions are going to be less favorable for storms to develop in the Atlantic. The interesting thing is for the upper Midwest over Wisconsin, you know, what's the El Nino signature? And really it's mixed, and that really goes to the fact that in some parts of the globe, the factors that control our long-term weather and into climate-type regimes are a mixture of factors, El Nino being just one of them. And we sit at a place in the atmosphere that's sort of where there's an indistinct signal for what El Nino is going to mean for us. Broadly, typically we might expect slightly above normal temperatures when we get into the fall and the winter, which will be a relief to some people
yes.
that have been, were exhausted from this past winter. But it's, you know, the signal for us is going to be probably less clear than it may be for the southern part of the United States.
We are talking about our weather, talking about the severe weather outbreak that we've seen in this past week, this last week of spring. Tomorrow, summer arrives, and we thought we would also talk about what we might expect in the summer. And we're welcoming your weather-related questions. We're welcoming any weather stories you might have. Were you affected by the severe weather in Wisconsin this week? Close call or worse with a tornado, perhaps? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We are talking with Michael Morgan, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. We'll check news and then we'll be back. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.
A summertime, and the living is easy.
We're talking about summer weather. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking with a guest weather expert, recapping this week's severe weather pattern. And we're talking about what we can expect in terms of temperatures and precipitation over the next few months. And we are welcoming your weather-related questions and experiences. Did you or were you affected by this week's severe weather? Any damage to report? A near miss to share? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. Our guest is Michael Morgan, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison and director of the Division of Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences at the National Science Foundation. And while we were experiencing stormy weather this week in Wisconsin, which you experienced with us on Monday night, Professor Morgan, now you're on the East Coast, and are you kind of sweltering out there right now?
You know, actually, it's not too bad relative to how bad I know it can get. We've been in the middle to upper 80s the last few days, and it's been humid, but, you know, sometimes this time of year we can be in the upper 90s with even higher dew points, and so it's, I wouldn't call it sweltering. Mm-hmm. It's a bit uncomfortable.
Yeah.
You know, I guess the term they use is muggy out here, but it's not, you know, it's not too bad, actually.
We have John on Facebook who asks, I guess sort of tongue-in-cheek or sarcastically, saying that the weather that we've experienced in Wisconsin this week, and I think referring to the odd weather of the winter and spring as well, couldn't by any chance be a byproduct of climate change, now could it? So what do you have to say about the weather we're experiencing and
right.
what that says about climate change or what some people call global warming?
Right. I would say that the, you know, could it be associated with climate change? I think that's certainly possible. That's really the question, the heart of it, and what the research that a number of folks in this area, in this field do. And I think that's a question that's sort of unresolved. We really don't know. To see the climate, any, you know, signal in this winter's wacky weather, the cold weather that we had, or even, you know, bringing it down to just what's happened over the past week, I think it's very difficult to attribute any of those things specifically to climate change. But you have to look at the overall change in the statistics of our weather patterns over the next several years and decades to really look back retrospectively to link them, attribute them to you know, anthropogenic, you know, human climate, you know, perhaps human-caused climate change. I mean, there's a lot of climate variability to begin with in our climate system, but trying to disentangle the part, when people talk about global warming, they're typically referring to the increase in the global average temperature due to greenhouse gases. And they also, the term sometimes used is, you know, climate change, referring to that. And it's really a tricky business to link our individual weather events or even our past season to climate change. There's a school of thought that the cold weather we had this past winter is due to the decrease in the ice over the Arctic, ice cover in the Arctic. And but recently a paper came out that suggests it's actually another possible cause is due to the warming over the Pacific, not the El Nino warming, just the warming of the Pacific, over the Pacific Ocean, Western Pacific Ocean, that created this large-scale wave train in the atmosphere that sets up a large-scale weather regime that kept us, you know, the northeastern part of the United States and Midwest, the coldest part of the Northern Hemisphere over the past 3 or 4 months. So it's, you know, is that a direct climate change issue or is it something else? That's something that we have to figure out.
David in Platteville emails asking if you, Professor Morgan, can address how flooding patterns are a part of drought patterns. And a word was missing there, so I was kind of confused.
Right.
He writes as a side note, $10 million in damage to the University of Wisconsin Platteville. This was no small storm in Grant County.
Okay.
That's a bad one. So I don't understand exactly the question, how flooding patterns are a part of drought patterns.
Right. I unfortunately, maybe you could send another email to clarify the question. I mean, if you've had a prolonged drought in an area and then you get an intense rain event like we had just a few days ago on Monday evening, as those thunderstorms were going by, that hard packed hot soil that hasn't had rain in it for a while, but, you know, the heavy rain is going to run off very quickly, and that can lead to flash flooding events. It's much like you're pouring rain over concrete. If the soil is a little bit more moist and is more susceptible to, you know, or the rainfall is a little bit lighter, obviously, then it can soak up into the ground more readily. But if you've had a long-term drought and you have soil that's, it's pretty tough to crack, or pretty, you know, it's very very hard, that, you know, any flash flooding, any heavy rain is going to wash off quite rapidly as opposed to getting absorbed by the soil initially. So that may be an issue there. The pattern of where you see flash floods and flooding in general and where you see droughts, if he's talking about sort of regional differences, certainly if you have an area that hasn't seen a lot of rain for a while, there's probably going to be an area nearby because of the shift in storm track that is experiencing above normal precipitation. That's certainly something that could happen. But the question, unfortunately, I'm not sure if I'm addressing exactly.
I think you're close enough. Let's talk a little bit more about that severe weather, since you mentioned Platteville and the damage there too. You know, I don't have necessarily the storm track in front of me, but it seems to me that we had this storm hit Wisconsin, and there was a tornado in Platteville. There was a confirmed tornado in Verona.
Right.
And another tornado on the west or southwest side of Madison, let alone a lot of other damage from you know the winds and all that sort of stuff. But I mean, was that a storm that kind of moved in that direction? So we had three tornadoes from the same storm.
It's possible the complex of storms taken together. I think the Platteville storm was part of a huge thunderstorm complex that developed actually over South Dakota and the Dakotas earlier in the day and had been moving kind of east and then east-northeast. And as those storms moved through Platteville and then approached just south of Madison, you know, the Verona area, they intensified. And you could actually see on the radar over time on Monday evening signals of rotation developing in the thunderstorm complex. These long-lived thunderstorms often develop their own circulations, and you could see the circulation developing and eventually descended to the ground and caused some, you know, tornado damage. And so the same thunderstorm complex could be responsible for multiple tornadic vortices. An interesting thing about this particular event earlier this week is, again, I have not done the tracing back, but I believe it originated in this cluster that affected the South Dakota earlier in the day. That storm in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, produced, if it's the same one, produced on the order of 0.85 inches in 5 minutes.
Wow.
If you want to talk about flash flooding, that would work out if it had been sustained over an hour, about 10.2 inches of rain in
an
hour, if it had lasted that long. So this was a really intense thunderstorm producing significant rainfall. Created a significant rain event, and it persisted. It went from severe weather to flooding over that area, and then as it moved eastward into southwestern Wisconsin, re-intensified, and you had tornadoes associated with it. So
yeah, and I'm pretty sure it was that same system, or at least related to that same system that hit Wisconsin late Monday night, spun off with some twisters in Nebraska too, including two twisters tornadoes coming out of the same cloud system. And in fact, we have some audio of I think this was coverage on the Weather Channel of this double tornado in Nebraska. Let's take a listen.
That is correct. It's about to cross the road here. I'm really worried about those houses in the shot here. You might actually see some buildings get destroyed right in front of us. Again, this is very concerning. Dr. Pastel, we now have two tornadoes on the ground at once. Two at once, there's a small rope on the right and the larger, more violent tornado on the left.
And then I think they looked pretty big to me. That smaller one got bigger, I think. How unusual is it to have two tornadoes side by side like that?
That is quite unusual. Unfortunately, I don't know the statistics, but I know just talking to colleagues that study this phenomena, that's something that's pretty unusual. That's not a typical. Seeing two intense tornadoes that close to each other is something that you don't often see.
Yeah. Let's go to Barb in Platteville next. Hello, Barb.
Sure. Hello. Hi.
Hi.
Good morning.
Barb, were you in, did you get affected by the storm, the tornado in Platteville?
No, I live outside of Platteville, so it was windy. We lost a branch. We have an old farmhouse with one of those caps on the top that blew off and stuff like that. But Platteville actually had two tornadoes that night.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, one hit the campus, and one hit kind of north of town. So, yeah, it was two confirmed tornadoes. So
okay.
One was at F2 and one was at F1, if I remember correctly. But, yeah, they kind of opened up the barricades last night, and I was able to drive through campus, and it was like, wow. But, yeah.
That is, and we wanted to talk about being just missed by a tornado at one point.
In Monroe's been hit by at least three tornadoes that I know of, and it was, I think, early 80s, and I didn't go down through the main street of Monroe or where McDonald's and Dairy Queen is. I went down a different county road to home in Browntown, and I had to pull over because it was raining so hard you could not see. So I went home and talked to my friends, and they said, oh, Monroe had a tornado. I said, oh, that explains the heavy rain. And if I had stopped at McDonald's and got dinner, I would have been in the tornado because it struck that part of town at three different times. So, yeah, that's my second near miss to a tornado. So, well, never seen one.
Yeah, you're lucky, boy. I guess lucky or unlucky. I'm not sure. Michael Morgan, I guess she wasn't hurt by him, so lucky.
Yeah, I think if you can get out of those situations uninjured, that's great.
Yeah, that's really something. We will talk more about the severe weather that we've experienced during this week and talk more about the weather we can still expect in the short term and the longer term. And we will welcome your questions and we'll welcome any weather-related stories you have, too. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. When will we see the sun again? We'll ask our guest. We'll talk about the short-term forecast and the longer-term forecast, and we'll continue to welcome your questions about the weather or experiences you've had with this week's severe weather. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Our guest is Michael Morgan, a professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison and director of the Division of Atmospheric and Geospace Sciences at the National Science Foundation. Let's take a call from Carol in Oak Creek. Hello, Carol.
Hi, thank you. I understand that tornadoes only occur here in North America and the United States. Is that true? And if it's true, well, why is that the case?
Is that true, Professor Morgan?
Actually, it is not. It's not true. Tornadoes occur across the globe, but in the United States, we see the most number per unit area. It's largely due to the fact that we have the Rocky Mountains out to our west and the Gulf of Mexico to our south. And that combination, the Rocky Mountains, provides dry, very warm air at upper levels of the atmosphere, and the Gulf of Mexico provides very warm and humid air from low latitudes from the south. And it's this interaction of the very warm and moist air at very low levels flowing northward to the east of the Rocky Mountains, coupled with this dry air moving off the Rocky Mountains and very warm air, that creates significant instability over a large geographic part of the country, and that leads to these big outbreaks. Now, there are always local factors that can influence thunderstorm outbreaks. You just need a really vigorous thunderstorm, and so you don't need the influence of the Rockies or the Gulf of Mexico. But the geography of the United States makes it the sort of hot spot globally for tornadoes.
And I guess that myth that tornadoes don't hit cities is certainly not true in Wisconsin, since maybe not a huge urban center, but we did have Madison hit by two tornadoes, or the Madison area hit by two tornadoes, and we had six tornadoes on that night. At least six hit Wisconsin on Monday night. Our caller mentioned that two hit Platteville. I didn't know that. An EF1 and an EF2, and then in Verona it was an EF3. There was also the one on Madison's southwest side, and there were two others in Greene County. So, boy, a lot on that one night, six of them. And remind us, EF1, EF2, EF3, I mean, that EF3 is getting pretty darn strong, isn't it?
That's right. I mean, those are, as you get higher from that scale, obviously, this is so-called Fujita scale. When you look at an EF3, you're looking at winds of about 136 to 165 miles an hour. And so they use damage indicators to come up with their estimates for the intensity of these tornadoes. But that's a pretty serious storm.
Yeah. And if I'm not mistaken, we did have a tornado warning a day or two later that affected Dane County as well, because I was on the air and the lights were flickering on and off, and I could see the rain just pelting the windows here. But that did not touch down. I think what it was is we had the warning because the radar indicated that it might be a tornado, but I don't know if anybody ever saw one. Does that happen too?
Yes, that happens. When they issue these warnings, it's based on either the observed tornado on the ground based on spotter reports or based on rotation that they see indicated by the suggestion of a vortex in the radar. They use the Doppler radar velocities to calculate what the winds are, get the wind structure. If that wind structure indicates rotation of a certain magnitude at a certain elevation, they'll issue a tornado warning for that.
Let's go to another call. Rachel in Milwaukee is with us. Hello, Rachel.
Hi there. I really enjoy all of your shows, but especially this one. My question is, we keep hearing about summer will arrive at 5:36 p.m. And then fall will arrive. What exactly happens in nature that brings on the change? I mean, what is
the time in which the sun is crossing the equator? I'm trying to get the exact time. On that date is the date that the sun is reached. Sorry, I have to think about the explanation for this. But it's we're looking at basically the position of the sun relative to the equator, and the summer solstice is the sun reaches its northernmost point in the sky at local noon.
Okay, but does the Earth move? Or the sun doesn't move.
Sun doesn't move. Right. So as we circle the sun, as the Earth circles the sun, we get into a particular position. I mean, the Earth has a tilt to it, its axis, and so as we revolve around the sun at a certain point in the year, we get to a point where, because of the orientation of the Earth and its tilt and its position at a particular part around the sun, it's not a perfect circular orbit. It's slightly elliptical. It gets to a certain point in which the angle that the sun's rays are hitting the Earth are configured in such a way that we're getting the longest day of the year, or close to the longest day of the year, when summer arrives.
And we're going to have the longest day of the year tomorrow, and then they start getting shorter.
That's correct.
Oh.
So you could think about our descent back into winter.
No, I'm going to enjoy the summer, but the summer's going to be, recap for us in our final minutes here, we're going to have I don't know. It doesn't sound like the kind of summer I like. I like it warm, very warm and sunny all the time, and that's probably not the case?
That's probably not the case. It's looking to be a summer which is going to be, for most of the state, below normal. For the extreme southern part of the state, the chances are we'll be pretty close to, very likely close to normal. But there's a signal that suggests below normal temperatures for much of the state and western, and going into Minnesota and further to the west. And for precipitation, we should be fairly close to what we expect to get, normal average precipitation. And for the year to date, we're pretty close to average, close to what we expect to have for precipitation. So it looks like drought issues, or at least at this point, don't seem to be an issue at all for any part of the state at this point, and hopefully we'll continue in that vein.
And if El Nino comes true, we might have above normal temperatures in the winter, yay?
Yeah, the fall and winter, we could be above normal. That's kind of the signal that we get, but as I mentioned, I think there's a clearer signal for the western and southern part of the United States of being above normal precipitation-wise. For us, we're in this area where a lot of other factors can influence our trend, but there's a chance it will likely be above normal next winter.
Yeah, and still a minute to go. Are we moving out of this severe weather pattern that we've been in for the past many days?
I think we are. We're going to be, we have a bit of a respite today, and then just more of our typical afternoon thunderstorms for the next, starting tomorrow for the next few days. But we'll have this another boundary moving close to our area in the next over the next week, and it'll be near us, so I think that'll increase our risk of more potent thunderstorms, perhaps more severe thunderstorms, about a week or so from now. But just you know, stay tuned and keep your eye to the sky for severe weather, and that'll keep you safe.
Yeah. Well, it is what it is. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you.
Michael
great.
Morgan, professor in the Department of Atmospheric and Oceanic Sciences at UW-Madison. Thanks very much to Bill Martins, to Christy Taylor, and to Robin Sherry for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. It's our week in review. We'll have guests from different perspectives discussing and debating the top stories of the week. That's coming up in our week in review in our next hour. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.